This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The second parasha that we read today starts with a Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe le'emor. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael, speak to all the congregation of B'nai Yisrael, v'omato alehim, and you shall say unto them, Kedoshim tiyu, you shall be holy. Ki kodosh ani Hashem elikechem, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Says Rashi, Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael, speak to the entire congregation of B'nai Yisrael, melamed shenemro parsho zu b'hakil. That teaches us that this parsha was set out b'hakel in front of the entire nation. Rashi gives a reason, mipnei sheroiv gufei Torah tuluyin bo, because most elements of the Torah are dependent on this particular parasha, which simply means that as we go through it, we see that there are all sorts of halachas, both bein odom lemakrim and bein odom lechaveru, both man-god laws and interpersonal laws of a wide variety, are all summarized in intense concentration in this parasha. But for that, it would be sufficient, surely, for the parasha to start further on. Why included in this is the first mitzvah of the parasha, Kedoshim tiyu, you shall be holy. So we see from this that the halacha of you shall be holy, firstly we see that that's also a law on which Rav Gufei HaTorah Tuluyin Bo, which the majority of the Torah depends on the correct fulfillment of this law. It's not an isolated law or a very high standard in addition to everything else. It's also nice of Kedoshim Tiyu. We see that Kedoshim Tiyu, the law, the injunction to be holy, to be sanctified within oneself, is fundamental to the whole Torah. And that's why it's B'hakel. And furthermore, we see also that this does not apply to Yechidei Sugulu. This is not one of the halachas that applies to certain selected individuals. The halachas that apply only to kings, the halachas that apply only to Kohanim, the halachas that apply only to Levim, and one might think that Kedoshim Tiyu, the halacha of Kedoshim Tiyu, applies only to certain individuals of very high standards. That isn't so. Kedoshim Tiyu is a law like any other law in the Torah, and it applies to every single Jewish man, woman, and child. Kedoshim Tiyu, you are obligated to be holy. Every Jew is obligated to be holy, whatever this means, whatever Kedoshim Tiyu means. And what if you're not? How serious is this halacha? So we know how serious other halachas are. If you don't keep Shabbos, it's very serious. And so we all try to improve our Shmira Shabbos because we know it's a serious matter. If we don't eat kashrus, we know the consequences of all these halachas. What is the consequence of not reaching levels of kedusha? And you know, of course, what it means, kedushim tiyu. In the Braisa of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyer, in the Braisa which lists the various stages of spiritual development, so it's a Torah, Torah Mevi'il Idei Zahirus, Zahirus Mevi'il Idei Zrizus. It's one of the, I think that's Mr. Goldberg's group on Wednesday night, isn't it, Mr. Lissishorin? Is based on that Braisa, the different levels that one reaches. And Kedusha is one of the final ones. So after you've gone through Torah, and Torah brings to Zahirus, which means being meticulous in every detail of halacha. And once one is being meticulous in every detail, one is elevated to the level of Zerizus, where one starts becoming active, one becomes passionate in one's keeping of halacha. And from Zerizus one comes to Nekius, one becomes cleansed in one's keeping of halacha. And so it goes, step upon step upon step, until eventually one gets to the highest level of Kedusha. And that level to get to Kedoshim, to Kedusha is a mitzvah in the Torah. What happens if you don't make it? How serious is it if we don't make it? There's a very fascinating Ramban in Ki Teitzeh, where we have the theoretical case of the Ben Seirah Remoire, a young boy, just past the mitzvah age, who steals food and eats in a disgusting way. And he's warned and punished and he does it again. What's his punishment? The parents take him to the Beis Din and they announce that this is a deviant son, a rebellious son, enenu shomea bekoleinu, who doesn't listen to our voice, zolil v'sovei, he's a glutton and he's a coarse person, uregamu kolan she'ire ba'avonim v'meis, he gets the death sentence. And which death sentence does he get? He gets the worst of the death sentences, skilo, he gets death by stoning. Terrible death. I said it's theoretical because Chazal tell us that there's never been such a case where it's actually happened. The laws, the requirements of evidence are such, and the whole thing is structured in such a way that practically it's very difficult to happen. But there's principles here. So we have a principle, even though he's a theoretical principle, of a young boy, just passed by mitzvah, who is undisciplinable. What is his punishment? Death. Sister Ramban, what has he done wrong? For stealing, you don't get death. For eating in a gluttonous fashion, you don't get death. What do you get death for? Says the Ramban. He's punished for two things. The first is disobedience to his parents and treating them badly. It's the first thing he's done wrong. When children treat their parents badly, there's no hope for the future. That's a complete destruction of the whole process of Mesoris. If the younger generation doesn't treat the older generation properly, then there's no way that the tradition can be handed down effectively from generation to generation. So that's the first thing he does wrong. Vahasheni. And the second thing that he does wrong, for which he gets death, Shehu Zolel V'Seve, that he's a glutton and that he's coarse. For that he gets death. It's interesting, people sometimes say, where in the Torah does it say that one has to be refined? Where in the Torah does it say that one has to be amends, that one has to eat nicely, that one has to behave nicely? Where does it say? It says that Ramban, for being a Zolel V'Seve, that he gets death. Why? Where does it say in the Torah? Ramban himself asked that question. And where does it say in the Torah that you're not allowed to be a glutton? Go and look right through Shulchan Aruch, start with the first simon, and go all the way through Arachayim, and go all the way through Yerudah, and go all the way through Cheshen Mishpat, and through all the way through Evan Ezer, and it will not say anywhere that you're not allowed to be a glutton when you eat. It will tell you what kind of food to eat, what is kosher, what isn't kosher, that it will tell you. But it won't tell you that you're not allowed to be a glutton. Nowhere in Shulchan Aruch will it say that. So ask the Ramban, why are we giving this man a death sentence because he's a glutton? Answers the Ramban, Over Ramashin Itztovinu Kedoshim Tiyu. It says Kedoshim Tiyu and is over Kedoshim Tiyu. And for that he's punished. So we see that in essence, although technically we don't give effect to this, in essence the consequence of being over Kedoshim Tiyu is death. And death by the worst method, by secure. That's what we see. So it's not a mitzvah to be taken lightly. Kedoshim Tiyu, the mitzvah of sanctity, is not a mitzvah to be taken lightly. What is that mitzvah of sanctity? Rashi says, Hevu Perushim Min Harayus Min Haviru. It means separating oneself from Aveira, from doing wrong. Not just not doing the wrong, but actually being prushim, actually creating a barrier between oneself and wrongdoing. That's what it means. Shekulmokum sha'atomitze geder erva atomitze kedusha. Wherever you see people taking measures against improper behavior, that's where you find kedusha. The Ramban says it doesn't mean only that. It doesn't mean only taking measures against improper behavior in the sense of avera, against things which are halachically wrong, but even taking measures against acceptable behavior, which is unnecessary. That means prushim min ha-misoros, says the Ramban. One has to keep away from luxuries which are not essential, which one doesn't need. Of course, what is essential and what is a luxury varies from person to person and from society to society. There are different cases. One has to view it all in accordance with where one's holding. But one has to be able to define certain things, and we're going to do that during the shiur today, this evening. We're going to define what this really means in terms of attitude, not defining specifics, but in terms of attitude, what is really meant by developing an approach of being prushim min ha-mesoris, of keeping away. What are we doing here, moving the furniture now? For people who are standing, people who want seats. No? So let's stop them. People who want seats, there are a few seats up here. While we're breaking, Stephen, can you bring... The superficial understanding of this requirement of the Ramban is almost a Catholic kind of interpretation, chas v'sholom, of having nothing to do with the world, of isolating oneself from the world in order to achieve sanctity. But we see in the Mesillas Yeshorim that that's not what is meant by Kedusha. We see altogether in Chazal that that's not what is meant by Kedusha, and in fact we see in this very pasuk that that's not what can be meant. When the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "You shall be holy, Kedushim tiyu, ki kodosh ani Hashem Elokechem, for I, the Lord your God, am holy," or in the same way as I am holy, so you shall be holy. What does that mean? So on the one hand, it means just as Hashem is separated from the world, is totally uninvolved in things material, so we too should separate our things from things material. That part is okay. But on the other hand, Hashem is not so uninvolved. As separated as He is from things material, if He really were to separate Himself from things material for one moment, the world would collapse. It would cease to exist. So is Hashem involved in the material world, or isn't He involved in the material world? He Himself is totally non-material. He's spiritual. And yet He's involved in the material world, in every molecule, in every atom of the material world He's involved. There's nothing in the world in which the Ribbono Shel Olam is not involved. So when it says, V'yisem kadeshim tiyu ki kodesh ani Hashem alekechim, you shall be holy in the same way as I am holy, what we're looking for is not isolation. What we're looking for is total involvement in every aspect of the world, but in the same way as the Ribbono Shel Olam is involved. Where I'm involved in the world, but the world is not involved in me. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam is. He's involved in every molecule of the world, but He's not affected by the world. The world has no involvement in Him. He doesn't become material. He doesn't become materialized through His involvement with the world. He doesn't reduce His stature through His involvement with the world. He remains separate although He's involved. And it's this strange relationship of being involved and at the same time being separate that we need to analyze in order to understand the strange mitzvah of Kedushim Tiyu, a mitzvah which applies to every Jew, and a mitzvah which is not just for high levels, but the consequences of not applying it are severe, as we see in the case of the Ben Soira Gomorrah. We get some kind of understanding of this strange relationship from a Medrash brought in the Yalkut, where the Ribbono Shel Olam says, what can this be compared to? A king marries a woman. Omar lo, he says to her, Hoyol v'niskadash lishmi, since you have become sanctified to me, you have married me, ani melech v'as malko, I'm a king, you now become a queen. Kashem shuhu kavodi, just as I am honored with the throne, in the same way the throne will honor you. Lama, why? What have you done? I was born a king. What have you done to become a queen? For no other reason than she'at ishti, because you are my wife. That's it. For that makes you a queen. Here we see a concept of elevation through attachment. That one can elevate oneself to the highest levels by attaching oneself in the most intimate ways to the highest levels. Sometimes we can't get there ourselves. How can we become a king? In my days in yeshiva, they used to say, it doesn't apply anymore. In my days in yeshiva, they used to say the only way to become a Rosh Yeshiva is to be born a Rosh Yeshiva's son or to marry a Rosh Yeshiva's daughter. There is no other way to become a Rosh Yeshiva. That was true. Today there are different ways. You just go and raise money and you can start a yeshiva. But in those days it didn't work that way. People didn't go to yeshivas because they had money. People went to yeshivas because they had great Rosh Yeshivas. And that was the only way to become a Rosh Yeshiva. You either had to be born one, or you had to marry in. You had to marry into a family of Rosh Yeshivas. Like royalty. You either have to be born a king, or you have to marry into a royal family. You can't just set yourself up, I'm a king. Doesn't work like that. So there are high elevated positions in society which can be achieved, which cannot be achieved in fact without attachment. But by attaching oneself to them, one can be elevated to that level. But there's more in this medrash as well. In the understanding of the apparent restrictiveness that defines Kedusha. It's almost an oppressive sort of mitzvah. What is this Kedusha to you? What does it mean to become holy? To become sanctified? And we think of all these Kabbalistic concepts of what it means to be holy. Says Rashi, what it means is separation from Avedus. Says the Ramban, cut out the luxuries. It becomes obsessive, it becomes oppressive, it becomes negative. Is that what Kedusha means? Just not to be doing negatives? It's like what Hillel said to the guy. When he wanted to be converted, he didn't say "Va'ahavta l'reicha kamecha," you shall love your neighbor as yourself. That phrase, which the Christian religion has elevated into this magnificent interpersonal expression of brotherly love, love your neighbor as yourself, Hillel says, don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself, turns it into negative. Why so negative? Why is everything in the negative? Very often when I give talks on marriage, I ask before I even start, I ask people to tell me what they think are the fundamental. What is marriage all about? What's the fundamental issue in marriage? I ask the men separately and the women separately, and you know the kind of answers that one gets. It means love, and it means romance, and it means caring, and it means giving, and it means responsibility, and it means all sorts of things people give. And it's always the same ones that come up. But what's the truth? At the bottom line, what really is created when a man stands under the chuppah with his bride and he puts a ring on her finger? What has he done in essence? What has he done? He has prohibited her from having any relationship with any other man. That's all. At that point, she becomes totally restricted in her interpersonal relationships. That's kiddushin. And that's why when he gives a get, what does he say? You are now permitted to other men. It's a change of legal status in terms of your relationships to others. Of course, there are all the other elements of the marriage, but if you look at the bottom line of what happens, all it is a restriction. No more dates, no more other relationships, that's it now. This is, you're committed. So why is it that when you ask a room full of ladies, what's the essence of marriage? They say romance, and they say love, and they say caring, and they say giving. You never hear them saying, essence of marriage is not having relationships with anybody else other than my husband. That's it. Negative. People don't say that. Because as we said last week, they're questions of prices and they're questions of values. Becoming restricted is the price of dedication. That's the price of loyalty. Loyalty is one of the finest of interpersonal relationships. Loyalty is one of the greatest of interpersonal relationships. One of the most highly prized and highly valued. One of the rarest. Loyalty. To know that you can always count on somebody. No matter what has been. No matter what is said. No matter what is done. If something's wrong, they'll come and talk to you about it. They'll clear it up. But they're not going to walk out on you. No matter how long you haven't seen them for. No matter how you've neglected them. Loyalty is knowing they're always there. And they're not looking around for somebody else to replace you. It's loyalty. But the price of loyalty is restriction, commitment. If one sees the value of loyalty, one doesn't view the price. So as Oscar Wilde says, and I reminded the ladies this morning, a cynic is a person who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. And the opposite of a cynic is a person who knows the value of everything and the price is irrelevant. When you're looking at items of great value, there is no price. The price is not important. What you're working in your mind is value, not price. And so when you ask a group of ladies, what is marriage? They don't look at the price of marriage. It's like saying to a person, to a lady, what is that you're wearing around your neck? And it's a beautiful 5-carat diamond. She doesn't say, that's 250,000 rand I'm wearing around my neck. She says, it's a very beautiful diamond, pure, flawless diamond. That's what it is. She doesn't see the price as its essence. So when she sees marriage and when she talks about marriage, she doesn't see the price of loyalty, which is commitment, as its essence. That's what Kiddushin is. And so it is in our relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Kedoshim Tiyu, that means cut out all other loyalties. Cut out all other attachments. Cut out all other sources of gratification. Kedusha means you and I, that's it. There is nothing else in the world. That's the price, that there is nothing else in the world. The value is by giving up everything else. Look what we've got. We've got each other. That's marriage. And a marriage to the Ribbono Shel Olam is the essence of Kedusha. When Rashi says that what Kedusha means is Purushi mina arayusu mina aveira, to keep away from wrongdoing. Shekol mokum sha'atomitze gezereva atomitze Kedusha. For where you find the price being paid, you find the Kedusha is there. When you find people are careful not to do wrong, you find there's Kedusha there. That's the way one acquires. One acquires items, one acquires objects by paying for them. One acquires anything by paying for it. And when you pay for it, you've got it. The price of Kedusha is loyalty, restrictiveness. But there is one source of gratification, and that's the Ribbono Shel Olam. And automatically everything else must be cut out. Otherwise that relationship doesn't have the factor or the function of Kedusha. And what does it mean when a couple get married? Does that mean that the intersexual emotions cease to exist? That love ceases to exist? Does that mean that sexual impulses cease to exist? Chas v'sholem. On the contrary. All that it means is that it's used in marriage and restricted to use in marriage. So when the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you're married to me, that's the Kedusha. What does that mean? That all our natural impulses and all our natural cravings and all our natural talents and all our natural resources and all our natural gifts, they must be cut out. Now we mustn't use them anymore. Chas v'sholem, not at all. You use them in marriage. You use them in your relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And so we're not restricted in the use of our own talents and abilities. And we're not even restricted in our use of the world. We're restricted in the way that we use the world. And what is the difference? The difference is that in marriage, the relationship between husband and wife is seen as something constructive and productive. It's there to build. It's there to develop. It's there to be a foundation to a family. It's there to produce children. It's there to raise children. It's there to create a home which will be a source of chesed, of hachnosos orchim, of education. That's what it is. So all these resources which are put into that relationship between a husband and wife are resources dedicated to productivity. And in a non-marital relationship between a man and woman, when a man and woman are having a good time, and they're going out, and they've been going out for years, and every time she raises the issue of marriage, he says, look, do you want to spoil our relationship? It's been going so nicely. Do you really have to go and spoil the relationship? And goes on and on and on. What does it really mean? I view you as a source of gratification. Don't ask me for responsibility and for commitment. That's what it means. So all the changes in marriage is, do I view other people as potential gratification, or do I view that other people as potentials for building, as potentials for creating, as potentials for producing? That's the difference between arayus and kedushin, between complete abandon and negativity, moral negativity, and between sanctity. Sanctity, the same emotions, the same sexual impulses, the same attractions, but directed to productivity. And the negative is those powers left to total abandon without any kind of structure. The use of the world now becomes not a source of gratification. We now look at the whole world as the way we just looked at marriage. So we find ourselves in an environment, in a material environment. And there are two ways of looking at it. The environment is here to gratify me in one way or another, or I am here to use the environment to be productive, to produce, to create, to contribute, to develop, and so on. Each one in his own field. Some will be dayonim, and some will be rabbonim, and some will be melamdim, some will be teachers, and some will be businessmen, and some will be professionals, and some will be balei tzedakah, and some will be balei chesed. Each one finds the area in which he's going to construct and he's going to build. But do I view the world now as an opportunity for building, or do I view the world as an opportunity for gratification? That's what we've got to analyze in our relationship to the world around us. And we had in this morning's Iyur Shir a Malbim that describes the effect of Nisoyon. We discussed Nisoyon last Motzei Shabbos too, that Hashem has to check to what level we're prepared, how much we're prepared to pay for our avodas Hashem, at what point we reach a level where we're not prepared to bear the price anymore. And in chapter 36 in Posuk Chaf Beis, Eliyahu says to Eiv that the Ribbono Shel Olam hen kel yasgiv b'choichei. The Ribbono Shel Olam makes people strong with his strength, elevates people with his strength. Sheroit says is the Malbim lechazeke so'odom ulehaaloiso al yedei anisoyin lamadrega yosegedoyin. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants to strengthen a man and elevate him to higher levels through these trials and tribulations. Ad sheyiyu shovois be'enov toiveis oilam hazeh v'raoisov. Until there is no difference in a man's mind between the pleasures of this world and its tragedies. We talked last week about having to be able to say a brocha for bad news and having to be able to say it with simcha, having to find joy in it. How much, to what level, says the Malbim, that a tzaddik gets to the level where there is no difference between the pleasures of this world and the tragedies of this world. Hatzlocha v'oini, success and poverty. Brias haguf u'cha'ev onush, health or terrible illness, no difference. Pribeten v'shikul bonim, having children or losing children, chas v'shol. Unbelievable levels he's talking about. Shebezeh yis'ale al inyonim hachimrim al inyon shu lamayla miteva habosu. For by doing so, one has elevated oneself over materialism to a level where one is superhuman. Inyan eluki, one becomes godly. Bo yibochnu amishalchim lefonov be'emes. In this, the true tzaddikim are chosen out, are selected. That's what a tzaddik is. Tzaddik is not measured by how many mitzvahs he keeps and how many avedas he does. That's not how we measure a tzaddik. As we said last week, that's not a tzaddik. A tzaddik, in essence, says the Malbim, is a person who has elevated himself to a level where his relationship to the world is such that it makes no difference if the world is gratifying him or the world is causing him tzoros. It makes no difference. He's here for avedas Hashem. He's here to build, and it makes no difference whether there's suffering in that building or there's pleasure in that building. The pleasure comes from the building, it doesn't come from the method. And we had last night that amazing medrash of the man on our sidra, on Achrimus, where the man is having a wedding, and on the fourth day of the wedding, of the Sheva Brochis, is Ziminetz Lohuchim, Vishochlu, Vishosu, Vitivus, Libom. After eating and drinking and having satisfied their hearts, Omar Livnoi, he says to his son, to the Chosen, go and bring a barrel of the special wine from the attic. Kivan she'olo, the son goes, Hikisha nachash v'meis, a snake bites the son and he dies. Hintin le leire, the father waits for the child to come, v'lo yorod, he doesn't come down. Omar ani oile v'roye ma'ativi shel b'ni, he says, let me go and see what's happened to my son. Olo mitzoi she'ikishu nachash v'meis, umutal ben achavis. He sees that his child has been smitten by a snake, and is lying dead among the barrels. Here's his son, he's waited for this all his life. Son's finally getting married. He'd set aside a barrel of wine that he'd kept preciously for years and years. Probably they made it at the time the child was born, and they decided at his chasana they'll open it, and it's been maturing all these years, and the height of the simcha comes, his friends are around him, and he sends the chosan up to bring this barrel of wine that he's been preserving for so many years. And the son is killed. What does the father do? Himtin ad shegomru su'udoso. Number one, he He waited till the Suda was finished. People came to celebrate. It's not nice to tell them in the middle of their celebration that, sorry, go home, a tragedy has happened. Not going to spoil their celebrations. So he comes home and comes back from the attic, having discovered his dead son, and he's able to continue with the celebrations in a way that they don't pick up that anything's wrong. And then he says to them at the end, now it becomes a little bit tricky because they've got to say Sheva Brochas. And if the color's not there for Sheva Brochas, well, they can say she's behind the Mechitza or something, they can make some kind of excuse. But where's the Chosen? So he's got to come up with it. So he says to them, Loy Levoreches B'ni Birkas Chasonim Bosem Elo Birchu Olo Birkas Averim. He says, I know that you thought you'd come here for Sheva Brochas. And that's why you've been celebrating, and that's why you thought you came, but the Ribbono Shel Olam had other plans. But don't worry, no major changes. Just the wording of the brocha changes. Instead of a brocha for Sheva Brochas, we're going to say Baruch Dayan Ha'emes. Different brocha. Leilach Mrs. B'ni L'chupa Bosim, you thought that you've come to celebrate the transition of my son from bachelorhood to married life to the chupa. You have come to celebrate a transition, but it's not from married life to the chuppah. But boi b'chnisu l'kivrei, come and help me effect the transition into the grave. That's what we're going to have to do. What does the Medrash mean? That the father doesn't see a change in avodas Hashem. The circumstances have changed, but the duties and obligations of praising the Ribbono Shel Olam, that hasn't changed. The emotions are different, but they're still equally deep. The people have come. Why have the people come? Have they come to have a good time? No, that's not why you go to a wedding, to have a good time. You go to a wedding to be Mesameach Chosan B'Kala. You go to a wedding to say Sheva Brochas. Most people don't. They go to the wedding and they eat and they drink and they have a good time and they leave well before Sheva Brochas. It's the wrong way around. The purpose of being there is to say Sheva Brochas. To praise the Ribbono Shel Olam out of that simcha, to participate and identify with the simcha, and in that elevated state of simcha, to participate in the Sheva Brochas. That's why you go. So the purpose of being at a wedding is to say a specific brocha based on deep emotion. Says the father, you'll still be able to say that brocha. Not the Sheva Brochas brocha, Baruch Dayan Ha'emes, a different brocha. But you can praise the Ribbono Shel Olam from the same deep emotions that you would have otherwise. Difficult to understand, difficult to picture. But we're talking about tzaddikim, we're not talking about ordinary people. People whose relationship to the world is in no way designed for self-gratification. The purpose of the simcha is not for my joy. It's to put the Ribbono Shel Olam at the center of the simcha. That's what it's all for. My joy is the vehicle to praise the Ribbono Shel Olam. My sadness is also the vehicle to praise the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it makes no difference to me in essence, other than my own emotions. But in essence, religiously, spiritually, it makes no difference to me. If I'm praising the Ribbono Shel Olam out of happiness, or I'm praising him out of sadness, what's important is that I feel it deeply. And I feel it deeply, and we can all feel it deeply, says the father to his visitors. And so we see a person who is relating to the world around him, not in any way as one of self-gratification, of seeing simcha as a form of entertainment. That's not what it is. He sees entertainment as a form of avodas Hashem. The simcha is the means of serving God. Serving God is not a means of coming to simcha. And that's the test. Would I feel the same if it was tragedy? When we discussed in the shiur this morning, a chazal that says, always such a difficult chazal, which I've spoken on before, but from a different point of view, that tzaddikim chavivim aleihem amenu yesu migufam. Tzaddikim value their money more than their bodies. More than their health. Strange thing to say. Tzaddikim value their money, their possessions, more than their health. But we see there is such a concept, because in the same Perek of Iyev in Lamed Vav, in Posuk Chof Aleph, Eliyahu says to Iyev, He shomer al tefen el oven. Be careful. Don't seek other forms of suffering. Says Rashi, don't say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you should rather have given me poverty than such ill health. Don't forget, you have suffered the most terrible pain, the most terrible ill health. He was completely demoralized and immobilized by his health, by his lack of health. And that's what he's complaining about. Says Eliyahu to him, don't think that you would have been better off with poverty but having your health. We said this morning, people generally say, as long as you're healthy, it's all okay, everything else is alright. That's not really a Jewish view. As long as you're wealthy, everything's okay. That's a Jewish view. Health you can manage without. Strange. It's absolutely opposite to everything you'll hear anybody saying, but here we've got in Tanakh, Chazal, Rashi. If you're healthy, still that's not enough. Wealthy, good, that's okay, then you don't need to be healthy. What does that mean? But we see this theme coming up over and over again in Chazal. An oni choshuv kemeis. Terrible thing to say. A poor person is like a dead person. Terrible thing to say. Heartless thing to say. But it's emes. That's the truth. A person who is totally impoverished is like a mess, like a dead person. It doesn't say that a sick person is like a dead person. There's no such chazal that says a sick person is like a dead person. A sick person is alive. A poor person is like a dead person. So what's better? If one had to choose to be healthy and impoverished, or to be sick but wealthy. See, to be sick but wealthy, I'm still alive. To be healthy but sick, but to be healthy but impoverished, only choshuv kemes. That's not a life. Why not? Rashi goes on the next words of Eliyahu, ki al ze bochartu me'oni. For this you have chosen in favor of poverty, says Rashi, ki al ha'yusrim alolu yesh livcher yeseh me'anius. Because if one is put into that position, it is right to rather choose your suffering than to choose poverty. I believe in suffering of Eiv. When we talk about the suffering of Job, that is the ultimate of human suffering. And Eliyahu says there's one worse than this, which you haven't been afflicted with, and that's poverty. Don't wish for a moment to exchange your suffering for poverty. Adam shenagu by kovud v'lomud ba'isher kol yomov. A person who has been accustomed to honor and dignity and to wealth. We're not talking about a person who was poor, became wealthy, and then became poor again. That he can handle that. That's not such suffering to the same degree. But a person who's been born into wealth and is accustomed to wealth. For him, the yamid al amekach, for him to be walking through a shopping center and to look in a window, the engle domim, and he can't afford what he sees there, uvesh, and he feels embarrassed, the shov levese befachi nefesh, and he has to go home depressed and oppressed. There's no suffering like that. It's Chazal. This is not Mr. Trump talking in New York. This is Rashi. There is no suffering like the suffering of having been accustomed to wealth and having to look at something in a window and you can't afford it. That's no good. What does this mean, this Chazal? What kind of relationship is this? What does it mean that we should value wealth more than health? Such an un-Jewish thing to say on the surface. And yet it's Chazal. That's how it is. Of course, it's all theoretical. We want both. And if we can't have both in extreme, we want at least both to manage. Nobody would want to give up their health, of course. But we see that if, theoretically, a malach came, an angel came and said, you've got your choice, one of the two. Either total impoverishment, but you'll be healthy. Or you're going to have the Yisurim of Eiv, chas v'shol. You're going to be oppressed with the most terrible suffering, pain and ill health. But you'll have a lot of money. The choice has to be the latter, not the former. Why? The answer is very simple. We choose health over and above wealth. Why? Because gratification is what's most important to us. And you can't feel gratified if your body's in suffering. What's the good of money if you're suffering? But if gratification is not the center of our lives, if the center of our lives is productivity, contribution, creation, chesed, tzedakah, what's more important? I can lie in bed suffering, chas v'sholem. And if I've got a lot of money, I can appoint managers. And I can instruct them to look after the wealth, to build yeshivas with it, to make sure that people are learning Torah, to give tzedakah to aniyim, to poor people. That money can be used well. My influence, the influence of the business can be used to improve the world. That can all be done. I don't know what. So I'm suffering, good, okay. But look what I can do while I'm suffering. The other way around, I can do nothing. I haven't got a penny. All I can do is what I can do with my own body, which is healthy. So I can do a bit of chesed here and a bit of chesed here. I can comfort somebody. I can help somebody. But nothing like I can do if I'm wealthy. I can't have anybody into my home. I've got nothing to give them to eat. I don't have a home. I can't really comfort anybody because who am I after all, and the way the world operates, if you've got no money altogether, if you're really totally impoverished, nobody really wants your comfort. Nobody wants anything from you. That's how the world operates. There's got to be some kind of dignity. There's got to be some kind of status. So my ability to be potent in the world is totally restricted. But I'm not suffering. Not suffering physically. I'm healthy. If self-gratification is the most important element, then my health will come first. If productivity and contributiveness and creativity is the most important thing, then my wealth will come first. Because a sick man with a lot of money can do far more for the world than a healthy man with no money. But we don't view that way. We view our wealth as a means of gratifying ourselves. So what's the point of wealth if I'm sick? And we don't view our health as a means of gaining wealth in order to be contributive. That's not the way we look at it. And we think we're very righteous by looking at it that way. But it's not the correct way to look at it. And one sees the whole atmosphere that exists in the world today of the environmentalists. Sure, we mustn't belittle this. The environment has to be looked after. There's no point in destroying the world that we're living in. There are many ways to destroy the world that we live in. We can destroy it morally, which the environmentalists are not worried about. We can destroy it ethically. We can destroy it religiously, with all these things nobody's worried about. And one of the ways we can destroy it also is physically, materially, which they are worried about. Good, that's one of the concerns. It's not a concern which must be ignored, but it doesn't have to become the world's most important major concern. What is the importance of the environmentalists? Why is he getting so nervous all of a sudden? Why are there all this tension? The world is my source of gratification. Take the world away and what will I have? I don't have anything else. The world is the source of all my goodness. Not that I am the source of goodness for the world. The world is the source of goodness for me. And so we find the health fanatics also, the amount of exercising. You see people running around in the streets with agonized faces, dressed in the most absurd fancy dress as they go, riding their bicycles, running around. Why? To get healthy. Look, good, one mustn't belittle the importance of health. But everything to become healthy, there's an obsession with becoming healthy, with being healthy. Self must be healthy. Self-gratification. How can I enjoy life if I'm not healthy? Diets, watch what we eat. I said to the ladies this morning, I've seen Tzadikei Elon, Gedolei Yisrael, enjoying the most cholesterol-full chonts on their Shabbos, doing all the things the dietitians tell them they shouldn't do. And many of them, Kenan Hore, lived till a ripe old age, in good health, overweight, underweight. There wasn't an obsession with health. The important thing was to get on with the job, to do, to contribute, to build, to be active. And the rest came right. The obsession was with creating. The obsession was with producing. The obsession was with contributing. That was the obsession. The other things somehow took care of themselves. And that's what we're talking about when we refer to a relationship with the world around us. Not a non-relationship. Not isolation. But a relationship like the Ribbono Shel Olam has a relationship, kibiyoch. Involved in every molecule, but involved as a contributor. Involved as a creator. Not involved as a taker. Not involved in an egocentristic sort of way. Where the world is there to serve me. I am there to serve the world. I am there to make an impact on the world. I am there to change the world, to make the world a better place. And in order to do that, I need to be involved. My spirit alone, my neshama alone, would have been better off never having been created, Chazal said. Just to do my neshama good, I could have stayed up in Shemayim. I didn't have to be given a body and be brought down here. So why was I given a body? So the Christians and some religious people will say, just to make life difficult for me. God wanted to be nasty and try me and test me. But that's not the meaning of trial and testing, as we've just learned in the Malbim. The meaning of trying and testing is elevating. I've been given a body because physical things can only be achieved with physical bodies. And I'm meant to achieve physical things in the world. I'm meant to relate to real people, to real situations, to real objects. And for that, there needs to be a physical world. To be able to relate to real things, I need the tools. I need a house, I need a motor car, I need money to be able to do a chesed, to be able to build yeshivas, to be able to support people. One needs physical things. That's what it means when we say, in ein kemach, ein Torah. That if there isn't the material, there cannot be the spiritual. In this world, there cannot be the spiritual without the material. and that my healthy body is a means to be able to handle the tools which I need in order to achieve what needs to be achieved, not the other way around. That's what it means, Kedoshim Tiyu. To see my involvement in the material world as one of a contributor and not one of self-gratification. And we see that again at the end of the Sedra. Where the Rebbeinu Shlom ends the Sedra by saying, V'im alochem, I say to you, Atem tirshu es admosom, you will inherit their land, V'ani etnen alochem lo reshes oiso, and I shall give it to you to inherit it, Eret zovas cholov udvosh, a land flowing with milk and honey, Ani Hashem elokechem asher ivdalti eschem min ha'am. I am Hashem, your God, who has separated you from the nations. Why a land flowing with milk and honey? What difference does it make? If the purpose of having Eretz Israel is for a Beis Hamikdash, that there should be yeshivas and kollelim and Torah being learned, who cares whether there's milk and honey there or not? Why physical pleasures? Why the milk and honey? We need that as well. There needs to be that involvement as well. You too must distinguish between kosher and treif, between that which may be done and that which may not be done. And once again, Hashem concludes the Sedra with the way He starts it. And you shall be holy to me, for I am holy. And then I shall separate you from the nations to be to me. In Eretz Yisrael, in this land flowing with milk and honey, where you're operating in a material, in a physical way. But there has to be, at all the time, there has to be havdolah, there has to be separation, there has to be kedusha, there has to be sanctity. How can you be involved in something material and yet be separated from it? If the involvement is one of contributiveness rather than of self-gratification, then there can be. And so we find when we eat, for example, Mr. Yishorim explains it in the chapter on kedusha. It's not just, when we're talking about levels of Kedusha, it's not just a question of eating in order to be healthy. Because health is not the ultimate. Wealth is the ultimate, as we've just learned. Health is the means. So it's not good enough just to say, I'm eating in order to keep my body strong. That's not good enough. There's a much more direct benefit in the eating. On two levels. The one level is the same as the man at the chasana. We use every opportunity we can to praise the Ribbono Shel Olam. In order to praise the Ribbono Shel Olam, we need to enjoy the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hakoros HaTov, to be able to respond to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's really what Avodas Hashem is all about, to be able to respond to God. To be able to respond to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we need to receive from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And we need to appreciate what we're receiving. And that's part of the joys of life and the joys of a spiritual life. A spiritual life of Kedushim Tiyu, where one is involved materially in a way of giving, not in a way of taking. So you sit down to a Shabbos meal, and there's Kiddush. You sit down to a Shabbos meal, there are brochas to be made, there's Birkas HaMozim to be made. We use the pleasures we derive in order to elevate the dimensions of the brochas we're able to say. When Yitzchak wanted to give the brocha to Esav, what did he say to Esav? Come Esav, let's learn a Tosfos together, then I'll give you a brocha. Didn't say that. Bring me your contribution, your expertise is in cooking. You know how to produce a meal like nobody else knows. Bring me a good meal, Esav. And after I've had a good meal, I'll be able to give you a kind of brocha that I couldn't give you otherwise. I'll be able to respond to you, not only with all my soul, but with all my body too. I'll really be able to respond to you. And that will all be in my brocha. That's what we're doing in our interpersonal relationships. That's what we're doing in our man-God relationships. It's no good rarefying our relationships with man or with God to the point where there's nothing left to it. Where it's become so fine that there's nothing to enjoy, there's nothing to feel, there's nothing to respond to. It becomes so rarefied. You develop an intellectual relationship with your friends. It's very nice to have an intellectual relationship with your friend, but it becomes so rarefied. You can't enjoy it. Have a social relationship, have a friend around and have a good time, just enjoy each other, respond to each other, so that there can be avas rein, that there can be the love between friends. You can't do that merely by sharing intellectual ideas. Sharing intellectual ideas is part of a friendship, but that's not a whole friendship. A friendship is sharing simchas, a friendship is sharing tzoras, a friendship is sharing problems, a friendship is helping one another physically, materially, emotionally. That there's response, there's give and take all the time. That's the building of a friendship. you can rarefy it to the point where there's nothing left. You can rarefy anything to the point where there's nothing left. You can rarefy what we get from the Ribbono Shel Olam also to the point where there's nothing left. That's not what we're meant to do. We're meant to enjoy the things that we get, but to enjoy them not from self-gratification. To enjoy them as a springboard for response. To enable me to be able to feel and relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam's different kindnesses, all the richness of this enormous world that He's given us with all its brilliance. To be able to feel it, all its different tastes, to be able to see all its different colors and hear all its different sounds. And to be able to respond to the Ribbono Shel Olam with parts of my body and soul that I didn't know existed even before. That's what we're meant to be. That's where there's richness. That's where there's growth. That's part of Kedushin to you. Where everything we take part in, everything we participate in, is done with depth, is done with richness, is done with meaning. But it's all not done egocentristically. It's not done as a source of gratification, but as a springboard to be able to get back. So yes, what does one do in a marriage? Is there no joy in a marriage? Is it all just duty? Is that what it is? Until one gets married, one can have a good time. Gets married, then start the responsibilities and the duties and the obligations. We know that it isn't like that. There's give and take in a marriage as well. Enormous give and take. And a husband takes from a wife, and a wife takes from a husband. And a husband gives to a wife, and a wife gives to a husband. So what, isn't that self-gratification? When a husband comes home from work and the meal is prepared, isn't that self-gratification? Depends how he sees it. If that's where it ends, and here's my good meal, and he eats his meal, and then he falls asleep, and that's the end of it, then it's self-gratification. But if he sees this as communication, if he sees in every fork that he puts into his mouth, he feels the effort, the love, the attention that his wife put into preparing that meal, and it arouses a response within him, a response of gratitude, a response of love, a response of affection, in return to that, that's not self-gratification. And if when he is able to give to her, she too is able to see his giving in that and to respond, that's not self-gratification. That's using the interrelationship as a springboard to express oneself still further on a higher and higher level. Because we cannot jump down from the bottom to the levels of Kedushin Tiyun. We have to build ourselves up. And the way we have to build ourselves up is by the ladder of give and take, by the responsiveness that we develop. Ribbono Shel Olam gives us a little thing, and we magnify it, and we feel it, and we enjoy it, and we raise ourselves up to higher levels to express our gratitude, to be a little bit more careful in our avodas Hashem, to be a little bit more finer in our interpersonal relationships, all in an effort to say thank you. And the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us a little bit more as a result of that. And we take that and we elevate ourselves still more, and so we build ourselves up. But if we find ourselves either involved in self-gratification, where everything is seen as a means of gratifying ourselves, or the other extreme, where we become involved in spiritual rarefication, where we make everything so spiritual, and we make everything so fine and rarefied, where we make everything so gaseous that it can't be touched, that it can't be smelt, that it can't be felt, that we're unable to use our senses, what's the good of the give and take? The Ribbono Shel Olam gives and we don't feel, we don't enjoy, we aren't able to respond. That's the levels of Kedushin to you. Ki Kodesh Ani, not to be separate from the world in a non-Jewish sense, not to be separate from the world in an isolationist sense where you're unable to give and you're unable to take, but Ki Kodesh Ani, watch the way I do it, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm involved in the world in every way. I'm involved in every atom, I'm involved in every molecule. There's nothing in the world in which I'm not involved in. But the world is not involved in me. The world doesn't dominate me. I'm there as a creator, I'm there as a giver, I'm there as a builder. I enjoy the response I get from that building, but I'm not dependent on it. And so you too, Kedushin Tiyu, if you, while you're involved in the world, want to be independent in the world, be involved not as seekers of gratification, but builders of a better future, builders of a better world, developers of Avodas Hashem and achievers of Kiddush Hashem.